Robert Kelman. It's a pleasure to once again have the opportunity to be with you and to really celebrate the great work you're doing with Torah in Motion, not only for Toronto, but really it's becoming a model of what an adult education program can be across North America. I was thinking about exactly what to discuss when it comes to Parshas Vayechi. There's so much to discuss. The dialogue between Yaakov and his grandchildren, Ephraim and Menashe, the dialogue between Yosef and his brothers, the brachot, just a plethora of materials to be able to discuss. However, I wanted to just take you through one idea, which I had the opportunity to hear from Rabbi Soloveitchik many years ago, and focus on one bracha in particular, but focus on a larger theme, and that is the notion of sometimes when someone goes through difficult situations or scandals or challenging moments in their lives, it can be the kiss of death or the kiss of deliverance, depending on how they deal with those moments of challenge. Particularly, I'd like to contrast Yehuda to Shimon and Levi, and Yehuda actually to David HaMelech, a descendant of Yehuda, much later on. And in order for us to do this properly, we need to start a little bit earlier within the Torah portion, but to recognize the fact that we will get to, please God, the whole conversation that takes place with Yaakov and the brachot that he gives, in particular to Yehuda and to Shimon and Levi. Yehuda is introduced to us really in the first situation when it comes to the selling of Joseph. The brothers are interested, including Shimon and Levi, are interested in killing Yosef. And what happens is actually that Reuven says, Lo nakenu nafesh, let us not kill our own brother. Al tishpachu dam, let us not kill him physically ourselves. Hashlichu oto labar, let's throw him into the pit. Let nature take its course. Yehuda, who is immediately perceived as a leader, Yehuda does one step better, and that is Yehuda says, Ma betza ki narogez achinu, what do we benefit by our son, by our brother being killed, even if it's not directly through us? Let's at least make some money off of this and still perpetuate his life. Lechu v'nim kurenu l'Yishma'elim, let's sell him to the Israelites. And what happens is that that Yosef is sold to the Yishma'elim because of Yehuda's suggestion. And what happens is that in order to fake, as we all know, Yosef's death, his coat of many colors is immersed in the blood of a goat, which we all realize is not accidental, but really is a recognition of the fact that the same way Yaakov is tricked regarding the death of his son Yosef by the blood of a goat, Yaakov, who is tricked by his sons, is really the person who tricked his father with a goat also when he wore the skin of a goat. So what happens here is essentially Yehuda makes the decision not to be the best brother in the world. He's not going to win a medal for being a true citizen, the brother of the year, because he says, don't kill our brother, let's sell him. But what Yehuda does is, essentially, he plays some leadership role. Immediately after he plays that leadership role of selling his brother, when they realize how devastated their father is, the next chapter of Genesis, of Bereishit, chapter 38, says the following, Vayehi ve'etahi vayered Yehuda me'etachav. At that point, Yehuda has to leave his family. The word vayered, he has to descend from his family. He has to leave because the brothers really say to him, our father is devastated. If you would have really told us not to sell him, but to keep him, bring him back, perhaps make our brother Yosef take a Midos class or two, we would have listened to you. But because of the fact that you made the decision to sell him, our father is bereft, and we blame you for that. And Yehuda has to leave the family. What is Yehuda's life like when he leaves his family? Does he seize the moment to play leadership in his life, or does he follow the message that we see in the past where Yehuda is not willing to fully seize the moment to play the leadership role? And we see in the interaction between Yehuda and his daughter-in-law Tamar that he really does not take a leadership role in the life. What happens is, as we know, Tamar gets married first to the first son of Yehuda, named Er. It doesn't work out so well. Er passes away. Tamar marries the second son, Onan. Also doesn't work out so well. And instead of Yehuda telling Tamar, listen, two out of my three sons have died because of their marriage with you. Why don't you go find another family? He says to his sister, to his daughter-in-law, Shavi Amana Beit Avich, stay and reside in your father's home. Marry my third son. But my third son, Shelah, is not yet ready for marriage. Until Shelah grows up. But Yehuda, who doesn't want to tell Tamar the truth, never had any intention of Tamar marrying Shelah, as the Torah tells us, Ki Amar, because he thought in his mind, Pen Yamut Gam Hu, maybe his third son would also die, Ke Achav, like his brothers. So what does Tamar do? Tamar goes back to her father's home and waits to hear that Shelah is ready for marriage. The time passes, Shelah grows up, graduates university, and is ready to get married, but Yehuda does not send the email to Tamar saying, Tamar, it's time for us to have the third wedding. I've already worked out the band and the place and the location. None of that happens. And what happens is not only that, Yehuda's own wife passes away. And what happens is that as Yehuda is shearing the sheep in order to make a profit from nurturing these sheep, he meets a prostitute, as we're aware of. The prostitute is really Tamar. He solicits to have relations with Tamar. And he has, at that point, he's cash poor because he has all these assets within his sheep. So Yehuda tells Tamar, as we're aware of, listen, I don't have any money right now, but here is a eravon, here is a guarantee. And what does Yehuda give Tamar as a guarantee? Three things. They are the cloak that he wears, or the cape that he wears, more correctly, the cape. It is the signet ring that he has, and it is also the walking stick that he uses. These articles of clothing are not accidental, said Rabbi Soloveitchik. These articles of clothing represent something. In fact, a signet ring is only worn by a person who has a certain level of authority. After all, if someone does not have financial wherewithal, if someone does not play a role within the state, what role or why do they need a signet ring? A signet ring is only good for somebody who has a certain role to play within the community. A signet ring represents a person who plays a leadership role. The walking stick is also a sign of somebody who is of an aristocratic nature. If you remember the United Nations representatives of a generation ago, they would walk into the United Nations each carrying their own distinct walking stick. And the cloak is not a garment of need, but the cloak is a garment of respect, of aristocracy, of dignity. Said Rabbi Soloveitchik, so what is Yehuda doing here? Yehuda is surrendering the articles of clothing that he has that represents leadership. Because Yehuda is consistently not a leader. He's not a leader when it comes to the way Yosef is dealt with. He's not a leader in his own family when it comes to the dealing with his daughter-in-law, Tamar. And therefore, when Tamar asks, for a guarantee, what Yehuda gives are three articles of clothing which really celebrate a larger meta-narrative, and that is that Yehuda is essentially surrendering the leadership that he plays with in his life. But then there's one moment when Tamar is pregnant and Yehuda says, Hutsi'uha, take her out and burn her, let her die because she should be a lady in wait for my son Shelah, as I promised him, parenthetically, as we know, even though he had no intention of them getting married. And when Tamar says, you want to know who I have child with? I have child with the person who has surrendered these articles of clothing, these articles of leadership. And at that point, Yehuda does something he never does before. He seizes the moment to take a leadership role in his life. And Yehuda says, Tzadka mimeni, she is more righteous than I. Yehuda, for the first time, is willing to acknowledge that he is wrong, he's willing to acknowledge his role, and that's the first step in being a leader. And what happens is, at that point in time, this whole story changes. Because the child that is born out of this inappropriate relationship between a father-in-law and a sister-in-law is the progenitor of the kingship of David HaMelech, and is really the progenitor that brings us the Mashiach, who will redeem all of Knesset Yisrael. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, the moment in which Yehuda is willing to play a leadership role, he has the capacity not only to redeem himself, but to redeem the Jewish community, and to redeem the world community. This new Yehuda re-engages with his community, with his family. And we see that re-engagement in two particular situations. We see that re-engagement in the situation where we have to, that the brothers have to confront their father Yaakov regarding the idea that Yosef, the viceroy to the king of Egypt, wants the final brother Binyamin brought in front of them before he will give them any more food. Reuven does not take responsibility. Reuven says, you know what, Dad? Send Binyamin with me, and if I don't return with Binyamin, Eshnei Banai Tamit, you can kill my two children. In other words, you can kill your two grandchildren if I don't return with your son Binyamin. That doesn't play well with Yaakov. In fact, the fact that the word Yaakov is used there in that conversation is just accentuating the idea that when Reuven is so narrow-minded in his offer, essentially he's not talking to Jacob, the leader of the people, but he's just talking to his father, Yaakov, the father of Reuven. And Yaakov refuses that offer. But then Yehuda says something different. Yehuda says, listen, we promised the viceroy to the king, we promised that we would not ask for food a second time until we brought our son, our brother Binyamin. Onohi Erevenu. I will take responsibility. Not my children, not your grandchildren, not Miyadi Tevakshenu. I am totally responsible. Imlo havi osi alecha, if I don't bring Binyamin back, v'chatasi lecha kol yamim, I personally will sin to you all my life. Yehuda now, again, is taking responsibility in this situation. And by the way, the name used in the conversation with his father is not Yaakov. Because he's not just speaking to his father. He's speaking to the leader of the tribes of the Jewish people, and therefore the name used for Jacob here is Yisrael. And Yehuda is really playing that leadership role. And therefore, Yisrael, Jacob, is willing to accept Yehuda's offer. Now, we're also aware of the fact that when Binyamin is duped into, and perhaps almost incarcerated, it's Vayigash Elav Yehuda. It's Yehuda who seizes the moment to tell Yosef, we need to work something out here. Incarcerate me instead of Benjamin. Let's work something out. If it doesn't work out, we'll go to war together. We'll go to war against each other. Because I promised my father I'm not returning without Benjamin. This is a new Yehuda. This is the Yehuda post Tzadka Mimeni. This is Yehuda who does not assume a mediocre position where he says, don't kill our brother, sell him. Or Tamar, wait for many years until Shayla grows up, even though I have no intention whatsoever to ever allow you to marry my third son. This is a totally different Yehuda. This is the Yehuda of Tzadka Mimeni who takes a leadership role. This is the Yehuda who tells his brother, I'm taking responsibility. This is Yehuda who tells the most powerful person in all of society. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, I will not back down from my responsibility. With this in mind, with this background in mind, let us look at the bracha that Yaakov gives Yehuda. That bracha is a very interesting bracha. Yaakov speaks about Reuven in not such nice terms. He speaks about Shimon and Levi as people, also not so nice terms. Shimon and Levi, you got into it with Shechem. You felt that the means were justified because you had a certain end in mind. It's inconsistent with my value system, says Jacob. The Maharal discusses this in greater depth. And therefore, Shimon and Levi, he attacks them, but then he looks at Yehuda, and he says the following. Yehuda, ata yoducha achecha. You, Yehuda, you, your brothers, will acknowledge that you are the leader. Yishtachavu lecha b'nei avicha. Your brothers will bow down to you. But what is so unique about you, Yehuda? Gur aryeh Yehuda, miteref b'nei alika. You, Yehuda, are like a lion's cub. You're like a lion, and that's why Yehuda's sign is always that of a lion. Kara ravat ka'aryeh, uchlavi mi yikamenu. You, Yehuda, you crouch and lie down like a lion, and like an awesome lion, who dares rouse him? But it goes, but before that it says, Yehuda, you are a lion, from Miteref and Alita, from the prey, my son, you have elevated yourself. You have elevated yourself from the prey that you were involved in. What is the prey that Yehuda was involved in, says all the commentaries? Your lack of leadership, Yehuda. Your sinful ways. You confronted your lack of responsibility in your life, and you were able to turn it around. That's what a lion's all about. You were wrestling with the prey, your sin of lack of leadership. You surrendered the garb of leadership to your daughter-in-law Tamar. You were willing to sell your brother into slavery. There's no worse sin than that. But Yehuda, you were willing to say tzedakah mimeni. You were willing to turn it around in your life. You were willing to take the leadership role when it came to protecting Binyamin. Yehuda, you were in the mix with sin, but you, like a lion, were able to crouch and jump away from that sin, and that's why you're the leader. A leader is not somebody who doesn't make mistakes. A leader is someone who is able to learn from their mistakes, who has the courage and the charisma to learn from their mistakes. Yosef will play a leadership role in the Jewish people. There is the notion in the Talmud of a Mashiach ben Yosef, a Messiah, the son of Yosef, a period of time in which I believe we're living in right now, a Messiah that is concerned with the physical protection of the Jewish people, which is really the celebration of Medina Yisrael in its purest form. And so there is this idea of a Mashiach ben Yosef, a Messiah, the son of Yosef. But Yosef never becomes the complete leader of the Jewish people. That's because Yosef never made mistakes. Yeah, he has a situation with Potiphar's wife, who seduces him. He never is seduced. He's thrown in jail. He never forgets who he is. He is away from his family, but he names his children with names that still are consistent with the value system that his father represents. Yosef never forgets who he is. He always plays a certain significant role in his life. But the celebration of Yehuda is that there is a scandal in Yehuda's life. But that scandal is not the kiss of death. That scandal is the kiss of deliverance. Because he learns how to deal with life through the challenges, the confrontations, and the difficult situation that he goes through. Contrast that to what happens with Shimon the Levi in these brachot. And by the way, Rabbi Kalman mentions one could argue that his entire life is maturing from his youthful mistakes, and that's true. But he wasn't such a young person when his wife passed away. But what's important, I think, to realize here is that he learns from his mistakes. He's willing to fess up to his mistakes. And that's what a leader needs to be able to do. It's important to recognize that Levi learns how to deal with his anger and his challenge of violence throughout the biblical narrative. And therefore, the bracha that Moses gives Levi, that Moshe Rabbeinu gives Levi at the end of Zot HaBracha, is a very warm bracha. He says, Levi, you are now going to become the custodian of ritual in the temple. You've learned how to challenge your anger in effective ways. You've learned not to use it in inappropriate ways. And therefore, Levi, you have been redeemed from the experiences that you had earlier on. And I think that this is also not only true about Yehuda, but we also see this idea when it comes to David HaMelech. The Haftorah of this week is interesting. It focuses on the whole David HaMelech, David, and his last will and testament. Unfortunately, David does not have all of his children surrounding him. He only has Shlomo. He only has Solomon. David's family is a mess. Jacob's family is together. The whole tribes come together around his deathbed. Because look what happens to David HaMelech. On the one hand, David HaMelech, when he takes the wife of Uriah and he is confronted, David HaMelech says a very important statement. David HaMelech realizes that he made a mistake. The exact language is in Shmuel Bet, chapter 2, verse 13. Vayomer David on Natan, David says to Natan, Chatati la Hashem, I've sinned to God. Vayomer Natan el David, Gam Hashem evir chatascha lo tamut, God will forgive you from your sin. And if you look at that verse in a Masoretic Tanakh, in other words, a Tanakh that records the Masorah, the tradition of how verses should be read, you'll see something that you only find once in Tanakh, or once in the prophets, and that is that there is a pregnant pause in the verse itself, that after the statement of Chatasi Lashem that David makes, a sin to God, there is an imposed blank space in the middle of the verse. And the Gaon of Vilna said, what is this blank space? The blank space represents the feelings of David that are not shackled in words, recognizing and taking responsibility for the mistakes that he made. And for that mistake, as tragic as it is, and there are consequences for that mistake, but at the end of the day, as tragic and as horrible as that mistake is, he learns from it and is willing to fess up to it. But then there are the challenges of David's family and of David's children. There is the rape of Tamar. There is the rebellions within the family. And through all of that, David HaMelech, David, who is the greatest leader of the Jewish people, silent in the leadership role he plays with his family. And because of that, his family is totally fragmented. And with David's death, there is no chance of the unification of the tent of Abraham, the tent of Isaac, the tent of Jacob, is much stronger than the palace of David the king. All because of the fact that David does not take the leadership role he has to take in his interfamilial experiences. Yes, David teaches us how to communicate with God in a significant way. He's the author of Tehillim. He teaches us how to communicate. For that, we all are able to have a special and unique rendezvous with God. But David never takes the responsibility for the challenges within. that is the unique difference that we sometimes have regarding scandals in the Bible. They can be, at one hand, a kiss of death. David's family is destroyed forever. Or in the cases like Yehuda, or it can be a kiss of deliverance. One can learn from those experiences. This message is extremely important, because the brachot of Parshat Vayechi, these brachot remind us that what guarantees our immortality and our future is the relationship we have with our children. So when a parent blesses his child in the Jewish tradition, the parent doesn't sit, they stand and they lean on their child to remind each and every one of us that we're leaning on our future, that our whole future is predicated on what happens to our children. And we see what happens when someone is willing to take leadership within their own lives. Each and every one of us, or I'll just speak for myself, we make mistakes when it comes to dealing with our families, make mistakes when it comes to dealing with our children, we make mistakes when it comes to dealing with our spouses, make mistakes in our interactions with our community. There's nothing wrong with making mistakes. It's part of life. The question is what you do when you make the mistake. Are you willing to play the leadership role in your own life? Are you willing to confront yourself, which is often the hardest person to confront, and to say to yourself, I've made a mistake differently. I'm willing to engage my spouse differently. I'm willing to engage my self differently. When one does that, as Yehuda does, Tzadka Mimeni, one brings the Mashiach. First, when you're willing to confront your challenges, first and foremost, you bring redemption to your own life, purpose and meaning back into your own life. With that, you not only affect yourself and those that you interact with and you make changes within your life, also are able to change the world around you. So the answer, so the bracha of Yehuda, for me, is a unique one. It reminds us that being a leader within our own lives doesn't mean that we're always perfect. It means that we're always struggling to take responsibility for our actions and for our activities. When Yehuda does that, he becomes the leader. Shimon and Levi do not. They are removed from the life embrace of their father Jacob. And only after Levi realizes how he needs to use his vices and his virtues in a productive way is he once again engaged in the mainstream. Everyone a good Shabbos, and hopefully we'll learn from out of Yaakov, and please God, the blessings that we wish for our children will come true, and celebrate the messianic messages of Yehuda in our own lives and in our society and for the Jewish community.
Questions? Can I make a quick comment?
Please.
I was just going to say, in terms of Levi, you know, of Shimon and Levi, Levi, of course, becomes the teachers of Yisrael eventually. And Shimon is not blessed really by Yaakov nor by Moshe. The Zohar Bracha, Shimon's the only Lakshavah which is left out.
Right.
They're involved in the Avera with Pinchas. And basically, Shimon seems to be kind of basically dropped out of Jewish history. They, in a sense, they never heard from any of the things going on.
I think you're correct. Yes.
Okay. Just figured out the, Of course, the okay. Anyways, well, are you in Florida with the whole family?
I'm not. I am. Yeshiva University ran a program for rabbis and their lay leaders. Over the past month, we've brought 15 rabbis and their lay leaders together. To work on strategic planning, board development, skills assessments, and how to really plan in a non-siloed way, where the rabbi doesn't work with the lay leaders, but they are able to work together. And so the second group of rabbis came together over this week, so I've been here throughout that conference. The conference, interesting, was not run by rabbis, other than one comment that I made in the beginning and one lecture I gave at the end. It was run by business coaches from the Seisen School of Business. These are people who are trained in Harvard and other places, and the Alden Institute, which works primarily not in the Jewish community, although that's changing. So we've brought together experts celebrating, I think, the greatness of YU, that it can convene energies of all different types to help the Jewish community. And again, in the past month, 30 communities have gone through, I think, one of the most important conferences that we've ever run in the history of the community work that YU's done for the past 60 years.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. Has that anybody in Toronto? Because I haven't heard, this is the first I hear of it.
There are definitely people from Canada who were there. I don't remember exactly who came from where. You know, but I don't know, you know, it's a little hard for me to remember all the various programs. While those are going on, we have around 100 kids who are about to leave on various student service learning trips, and we're running a few other programs. So it's a little hard for me to remember every single program we're running, let alone the participants. There were definitely people there from Canada. Which parts of Canada, I do not remember.
I mean, I'm sure I don't have to tell you, one of the biggest schools here, I mean, there's no secret, is looking for a rabbi, and I know they're working with YU.
We're on top of that.
I realize you're on top of that, but I know that. That's what I'm saying. That's why it would be great. I don't want to say more, especially on public, but, you know, just to have these lay rabbi things is very important. I know you know. I'm just saying, you know, yes, you go up, and I think to spread it beyond the 33 D's, and Canada's still a big place. I know people could use Montreal, Toronto, Ottawa, it's all Canada. But anyway, that's great. That's very good.
Okay.
All right, have a good night. Have a good Shabbos, everybody. Thanks a lot. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.